Welcome back. So it is an hour out now before we have the close of nominations, and there are only three candidates, and it looks like there will only be three candidates because Maria Steen requires effectively a government party member, senator or TD breaking ranks to facilitate her candidacy. That's unlikely to happen because, of course, that would mean that they would instantly lose the party whip. So it looks like it's going to be the smallest field in a presidential election since 1990. If I could just actually get in behind. Yeah, perfect, yeah. The smallest field in a professional election since 1990. Independent, Catherine Connolly, Jim Gavin and Heather Humphreys. That's not confirmed, but it is actually at this point going to be, it's going to take a miracle. On this morning's Wellness for her, on this morning's Wellness Wednesday, we're focusing on a crucially often overlooked aspect of our overall well-being, hearing health. Mike Hearn is audiologist with Hidden Hearing. He's with me now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Greg.
Hearing is so important to us. Any of our senses are.
Yeah.
It's a critical sense, isn't it? It's how we interact. We're social beings, isn't it? You know, it's how we interact, not just with, you know, our surroundings, with TVs, but with each other.
Very much so. I mean, when you lose your hearing, you're not interacting with inanimate objects. You're losing your connection with people. You know, like it causes a strain on relationships, you know, husbands, wives, if one of them can't hear the other properly, you know, that they wind up kind of maybe bickering and not communicating. You think of people with their grandchildren, you know, if they can't interact with their grandchildren, if they're not sure what's being said to them properly, it creates a lot of trouble in relationships.
Yeah, for sure. With vision, and maybe this is not the case, but with vision, you know, you seem to get people that will go and get some sort of an intervention sooner, you know, so as soon as they're struggling to read a little bit or as soon as the writing's a little blurred, I think most people seem to go and get their eyes checked and get a pair of glasses that suits, whether it's for close-up reading, far away stuff or what have you, and that's sort of ingrained from a very early age. Yet our hearing is also an equally, or maybe not for everyone, but it's a very important sense. But it seems to be we don't heed the signs and we just wait till a critical point. Is that true?
A little bit, Greg, but thankfully I think that's changing now. I mean, certainly in the past, so like...
I know at least five people need to go and get their hearing checked today.
You're looking out the window. No,
not here. But I know five people around me that need to go and get their hearing checked today.
Yeah.
Like the truth be told.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think is putting them off?
I think that people just batter on. My dad got really, really good at bluffing. You could hear.
Yeah.
yeah, you'd swear he could hear you.
People do.
He also became quite proficient at lip reading.
Yeah.
And he just managed, you know. But he might be the exception rather than the rule.
No, his life
was greatly so much more improved when he got hearing aids. I'm just saying there's that period of time, you know. But anyway, sorry, I'm sort of personal experiences,
That's really, really true. People can kind of build coping mechanisms or defense mechanisms. You know, if you're meeting Mary down the road that you pass every day, you'll say, oh, isn't the weather great today or isn't the weather bad? You know, like you can kind of steer the conversation in a certain direction where you're almost expecting the answer, you know. So people will certainly do things like that to try and hide their loss, yeah. You know?
And I suppose I'm kind of jumping from hearing loss straight to, say, for instance, getting a hearing aid. But there's an awful lot of interventions, isn't there, like earwax or what have you? You know what I mean? So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so if somebody's having bother with the hearing, it may not necessarily be that they need a hearing aid. It could, as you said, quite simply be a wax blockage, you know? There's also what's called a conductive hearing loss, where it's not necessarily a hearing aid is the answer, but there may be some medical intervention, you know, as in an operation, procedure, medication, something along those lines. But I suppose if somebody doesn't come in and see someone like myself initially, we won't know what the problem is.
Yeah, a survey by Hidden Hearing showed 4 in 10 Irish adults have needed professional earwax removal, but many still suffer in silence. And I think it's the ones that I'm referencing that are suffering in silence.
Yeah, it's incredible to me that people will put it off, you know, that they'll actually, people will come in finally when they're ready to see you and they say, oh, I've had this pain in the ear for quite a while, you know, and immediately I'm alarmed because pain in the ear isn't good, you know. But then when you look in and you see it's just simply wax, you know, you wonder why they didn't come in and do something about it sooner.
A lot of people use buds in their ears. You see them jamming them in and rotating them, and they use them on themselves, they use them on their kids. Is that an effective way to look after your ears?
Absolutely not. It's the worst thing in the world you could actually do to your ears. Yeah.
Okay.
So all you're doing is you're simply pushing the wax in further. That's it. And in when somebody's overly enthusiastic with the cotton bud, they might actually damage the eardrum too, which would be absolutely horrendous because that leads to all kind of other problems.
So how do you look after your kids' ears or your own ears then, just your day-to-day maintenance?
Well, kids, I mean, I have a six-year-old myself. I can see sometimes when I look, I'll see the wax literally coming out the side of the ear, but it doesn't worry me. That's natural in kids, unless they were telling you that they couldn't hear or, you know, something like
so
that.
So aesthetically, you might sort of clean around the
exactly,
outer part
yeah,
of the
yeah,
ear?
Yeah, but I wouldn't go near that. Not with children.
Is
I wouldn't
that nature will look after
yeah.
it? Or?
So, like, I mean, the skin on the ear canal, the skin grows out. It grows out about the same rate the fingernails grow. So the ear is actually quite good at cleaning itself and looking after
Explain
itself.
Explain that to me again.
So
what's growing?
So, like, the wax is secreted through the side of the ear canal.
Okay.
It's slightly acidic, so it helps to prevent against bacteria and infections. But the other function of the wax is a foreign body. So imagine, for example, like a fly got into the ear, something like that. Now, there's skin on the ear canal, and the skin grows out, and it should bring the wax and anything else that's there with it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So if you see at least some of what's on the outside of the ear is nature's way of shedding, of clearing the ear.
You're delighted if the wax
that.
Is
yeah,
coming out.
That,
yeah, you're
that's
quite
interesting.
Happy. Yeah.
Okay, so that means their ears are functioning very well,
yeah.
then, potentially.
Yeah.
Okay. Adults then, though. Adults, how should adults clean their ears? Is it the same rules that might apply to your six-year-old?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I certainly steer clear of cotton buds, anything like that. If you do feel that, you know, you think you might have wax in the ear, you'll get solutions from the chemist over the counter, normally like a natural olive oil spray or something like that.
It'll soften what's there, really.
It'll soften what's there, and then the skin is growing out, so it should bring the wax there with it, you know?
Okay, interesting. If you have any questions for Mike, get in touch with us. Could hearing loss be caused by aging, noise exposure, or something else? I suppose it's
all of the above and more, you know. Age would be the most common, followed by environmental. So lads that work loud noise, machinery. Obviously in Donegal, you're going to see a lot of lads that worked in tunnels, you know, that kind of thing. So they all have horrific hearing losses normally. But quite often it's hereditary too. I mean, that's how I became interested in this field. I mean, it's something that runs in our family. I mean, my mum wore hearing aids from like late 40s
and
on.
What's happening there that's causing the hearing sort of in a genetic sense to disimprove?
Bad luck.
Yeah. I mean, but like our hair's dying off or what?
Yes, yeah. So it's the cochlea, the inner ear. Mm. And when you're young and the ear is healthy, you normally have about 35,000 little hairs called cilia. Mm. They're in the fluid, they dance back and forth, and they convert the sound wave from a mechanical energy into an electrical impulse. Mm. So it runs up the acoustic nerve to the brain, and that's how we hear. As we age, those hairs die off anyway, you know. And for people that work loud noise machinery, they're damaging the hairs more quickly.
I DJed for 10 years or so, and I favoured my right ear for cueing tracks.
Okay.
Now, the hearing is fine, and I'm not just self-diagnosing. I did actually on this occasion have it checked, but it is slightly worse than the other, so I can see very clearly myself. How it made a difference. And that was for a couple hours once or twice a week.
Yeah.
So if you're in that environment all of the time in stereo, how we hear, sorry, before we get on, how we hear is quite interesting. And we see that in this space an awful lot. So say someone comes in as a student or what have you, and we ask them to record their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And their voice that they hear played back to them seems very unfamiliar to them. We hear in a different way. We're not hearing necessarily our voice going out into the world and then in through our ears.
No. When you speak, you hear yourself in a very unique way. You hear yourself through air conduction, where the sound waves are coming back in through the ear canal. But when you speak, you're actually vibrating the cochlea directly. So there's an element of when you speak yourself, how you hear yourself is through the bone conduction. It's why, you know, if you hear yourself on an answering machine tape recorder, your voice sounds so different to you. It's alien.
Do I have hearing loss or is it just earwax temporary blockage? Well, it's one of those, isn't it? That's why we're encouraging people to go and get your ears checked.
No different than the previous segment you had on. If somebody hasn't come in, you can't really tell what the problem is, you know?
Okay, so in the first instance, obviously, you assess someone's hearing, you determine whether, you know, their wax is required or if other intervention is required. And then we get to sort of hearing aids. And it's been really quite interesting to sort of see Apple sort of, you know, dip their toe into this market, whether or not it's welcome or not. But they, you know, any of the companies, JBL, Bose, Apple, that are sort of working with sound to sort of get taking an interest in this. My point being is that it's a great space of innovation in terms of hearing aids.
Very much so. I suppose the thing with Apple is it's great that you can do that little 4-minute hearing test on the phone yourself at home. And, you know, one of the things we mentioned at the start was people for some reason are very put off by maybe coming in initially. So this could be great. This could maybe get them into kind of actually checking their hearing, realizing they have a hearing loss.
But they're also proposing to have a system whereby with the earbuds that they work, they work as hearing aids effectively. I don't think that's really a fantastic solution, personally, because do you really want to walk around with two white things hanging out of your ears? But again, if you've got big companies working in that space, you know, for more traditional hearing aids, it's going to help. So where are we at? Where are we at technically, sort of outside of what any of those companies might be, as to what's available for people
on the market at present?
Yeah, yeah, the options that you can give people in terms of hearing aids.
Well, I suppose there's two main kinds. The first would be what we call an indie ear, which is maybe the traditional, you know, where it actually fits into the ear. There's nothing behind the ear. Works very well for some losses. It's nice and secure when it's in the ear. It's discreet. About 90% of the market now would actually go for what we call a receiver in the ear, the kind of over-the-ear ones that you would see people wear. It's far more comfortable to wear something
so
like that.
So is that whereby you, some of it's behind the ear?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And like, like I've noticed now, the bit behind the ear is tiny. You know, back in the day, it used to be, it would almost actually have the ear sitting out a little. But that was the technology of the time. Now it is pretty discreet.
Incredibly so. Yeah. I mean, especially for women, I always feel when there's a woman sitting in front of me, and generally speaking, after you've done the hearing test and you have a hearing aid on and you're showing them how it works, they normally ask for a mirror. You know, they still want to see how it looks. And they're often they're quite amazed that they can't actually see anything, you know?
Is there something in that? Because I referenced eyes earlier on, and, well, you know, we make almost a fashion accessory of glasses, and people sometimes will wear glasses with clear lenses in them. But I know, and again, I can sort of reflect on my family in that there was a bit of a resistance to hearing aids or people knowing someone had a hearing aid. I don't understand that. I can empathise with it, right? But why are we so pernickety about sort of letting people know we might be using hearing aids, or are we?
I think it's changing, Greg.
I hope so, because there's no need to people to be bothered.
Like maybe 15, 16 years ago when I started, we didn't generally tend to see people under the age of 70. You know, that was the market. But that's completely changed now. I mean, if somebody in their 20s, 30s, 40s, if they know they have a hearing loss and if they know that there's something will help, they are more inclined to come in and do something about it.
Costs is going to be a barrier for some.
Definitely.
So what is the range there? Because, I mean, you can have ones that are connected to your phone, can't you, that have Bluetooth and all this type of stuff. And then there are... So entry-level, effective, a good hearing aid that will greatly improve someone's quality of life. Is there a starting point or...?
Well, I mean, if you have PRSI stamps, they're actually available from free now. Your PRSI will actually cover the entire cost of the hearing aid. They go up then, depending on... there isn't kind of one solution fits all. It really depends on the individual's hearing loss, their lifestyle, what they expect from the hearing aid. So, I mean, maybe someone in their 80s and they have one or two visitors a day and they're normally in a quiet environment, they're not going to require something as sophisticated as maybe somebody who's still working in a busy office or maybe a hospital setting or something like that, you know?
So is there a certain amount the PRSI will cover, but you could top up to you could say, right, well, I'm going to put this amount because this is the actual item I'd prefer.
Absolutely. So the PRSI grant, if it's available, will cover 500 euros per ear. So 1,000 euros if you're talking about two hearing aids. As well, if somebody's still working or if they're paying income tax, the hearing aids class is a medical device and they can claim tax relief as well.
All right. And in terms of getting used to a hearing aid, your brain does have to do, not rewiring as such, but a little bit of getting used to. Is that across the board or just in the cases that I've experienced?
No, I think for everyone that comes into me, there's an adjustment period. So generally speaking, what we would normally do is wouldn't put the hearing aid up to kind of the full at the start. You put someone in what you call a beginner program. So it's maybe not quite as loud as the computer feels it should be for their hearing loss, but the idea is to kind of bring them in gradually and kind of bring them up slowly, maybe over the course of a month or so, Greg. And generally speaking, if you do it like that, people, you're far more likely to have a successful outcome.
Okay, let me see. Should I be worried about dizziness, balance issues, or ear pain? That's one of those ones. Is that a...
Absolutely,
you can
yeah.
go in and get that checked in.
Yeah, now, it may be something as simple as a wax blockage. If you are badly blocked with wax, you will experience some ear pain.
Because our ears are critical to balance, aren't
Very
they?
Much so, yeah.
Okay. And you can determine that, and it could be your first port of call, and then you can say, hold on, yeah, this is something that might need something else. Tinnitus. How big of a problem is tinnitus? I know it's a massive problem if people have it, but how common is it? How often do you see people presenting with tinnitus, and is there anything really can be done for it?
Probably roughly maybe half the people that come into me would have some degree of tinnitus, you know. It tends to go hand in hand with hearing loss, but you can certainly have tinnitus without a hearing loss, and you can certainly have hearing loss and no tinnitus.
Is it because how we hear when there's less other noise that the tinnitus noise becomes more prevalent? Is there something to that?
A little bit. Like most of the people with tinnitus, Greg, they'll tell you that they may not notice it during the day if they're busy, at work, they're doing things. It's when the house is quiet or when they're trying to sleep at night. Now, there's very, very good apps available now, and they'll be like the sound of the ocean, rainfall, something like that. And some people find those a great relief. The other advice you kind of give people is not to sit in the quiet. If you come home from work and you have tinnitus and you're sitting in the quiet, the tinnitus is bad, put on the radio, put on the TV, something like that. Not even that you're listening to it. You're just trying to confuse the brain and give the brain something else to concentrate on.
Hearing, I think, is like, or issues with the ear, sorry, it could be pain, the dizziness, whatever it might be. The earlier the intervention, it's always better, isn't it? Rather than to wait that it's like, you know, oh my God, does anyone know if there's an ear specialist open?
Absolutely. I mean, as soon as you notice something like that, it's common sense. Go and get checked straight away.
Yeah. One in five people say they hate the thought of earwax. Is it? Or going to get something done? This is the hidden hearing.
Oh yeah,
the hidden hearing review. Yeah. Why?
I don't. It's a natural. It's there to protect the ear. You know. I suppose maybe if you put your finger in your ear a little bit and you take out some and you look at it, it may not be the most attractive looking substance, but it's vital and it does a really good job of looking after the ear.
But in terms of sort of earwax removal, if we get to that point, there's very few things that take a little amount of time that can have such a dramatic impact, like walking in one way, walking out another way.
Oh yeah, God, like someone comes in, they're only maybe 20 minutes in and it might have been affecting their hearing, their balance, they could have been in pain, discomfort, yeah. I mean, to me, it's why wouldn't you?
This is for my own curiosity. Like, in one of the worst case scenarios, how much wax can be dislodged from an ear?
Think of the circumference of your ear canal and maybe half an inch, you know, something like that in a bad, like the wax, if somebody lets it go quite a long time and they know they're black, now this person will know because they'll be experiencing hearing loss, discomfort, but sometimes it can be quite bad.
And in terms of satisfied customers, 8 out of 10 people, 8 out of 10 people are satisfied with their treatment. Nearly half very satisfied. So that's not bad, is it?
Not at all.
It's okay. So what's your advice to people? Any concerns about hearing or maybe a loved one who is a bit resistant? I don't know whether it could be about earwax removal or just getting their ears checked and seeing what options are available to them or discussing maybe hearing aid options and the price structure of such. Like, can people just call up or what's the story?
Yeah, phone, get an appointment. I mean, we don't charge for hearing tests. We don't charge for a consultation. So it's going to cost you nothing. You can come in, we can have a look, establish. You may not even need a hearing aid. It could be wax. We may need a medical intervention. We may be referring you back to your GP or onto the ENT, you know. So, but unless you come in initially, nobody's going to know.
A caller says, have you any suggestions for tinnitus? I've had a diagnosis of high tone deafness for years, which brings many issues with it. I had many tests done, but no solutions. How much will it impact my ears if I use my less dominant LHS ear later on with listening to radio via earbuds? I had it checked when in the doctors and was okay, but will still keep an eye on it.
I don't particularly like earbuds. If somebody's going to be listening to music on a regular basis, I much prefer an over-the-ear headphone. I think it's much better for you. And the golden rule, of course, is 60% of the volume, not to have the volume up full, and maybe for 60 minutes at a time, and then to take a break.
Yeah. I'm glad, actually, I do agree with you. There seems to be a resurgence in over-the-ear headphones, which is, I think, good. Is there a cause for tinnitus? I know we talked about tinnitus, lots of messages coming in. And is there a cure for it?
No cure as such, just those coping mechanisms we spoke about. I mean, it's such a grey area. You even think about the definition of tinnitus. It's hearing a sound where no sound exists, you know. So how do you explain that one?
Yeah, of course, it is a very complex area, no doubt at all. Could a teenager with pressure like headaches probably... Greg, can you ask the audiologist, could a teenager with pressure like headaches possibly have problems with earwax?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, simple as
that.
So
pop into the nurse, pop into the doctor.
And you can have a look, and you and your team, it's very clear very, very quickly what's going on.
Oh, we actually have like a video otoscope, so we actually hold it up to the edge of the ear canal. It comes up on a big screen and you'll actually get to see for yourself.
If you want.
If you'd like to have a look. Some people look away.
But it's one of those spaces where you go and get it checked. It's free to get your hearing checked, get a consultation. And why suffer when there's something that potentially could be easily remedied? Hidden Hearing, where are you located?
We're on McCall House on the Pierce Road, just kind of near McGinley's Garage.
Great stuff. Thanks, Mike. Really appreciate you calling in. That's Mike Hearn, audiologist with Hidden Hearing. 32 minutes before the close of nominations, and Barrister Maria Steen, her efforts to become a presidential candidate look to have stalled. She remains two names short to get on the ballot paper. I don't have a particular interest in Miss Steen's campaign. It's just to keep you updated as the deadline looms. So three candidates at the moment. As I say, she's going to have to really pull a rabbit or two out of the hat to get her name on the ballot there. It is Wednesday, which means Chris Ashmore's with me. Christopher, how art thou?
Thou is very good, thank you.
Good, good, good. Let's get to some news before we talk about the Business Matter podcast. Wow, a lot of .ie names have been registered.
Yes.
We've been about for a while at least.
We have heard of .ie, of course, the national registry. Now more than 330,000 domain names. So it's shown how things have developed over the years. And just if you go back to the turn of the century, there were just 20,000 .ie domains registered. So we've gone from 20,000 to 330,000. Well, these are people who have websites and businesses and individuals.
Are there that many businesses in that space?
Well, don't forget, some of them may have expired.
Yeah, of course.
And then other ones, they could have multiple domains. There could be a .com.
It's not a big number, given
it's
our population.
It's a big number, exactly. And just the domain registry.ie, they've issued a report coinciding with 25 years. And one of the things that they've noted, that household internet access back in the year 2000 was 20.5%, and we're now 94%. So pretty much... heading towards everybody.
I think that's statistically everyone, really, isn't it?
Because there's always going to be a certain amount who just aren't going to have it and have no interest.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's huge, isn't it? Talk about advances. Advancing is Donegal ETB in terms of the facilities they have available to apprentices.
Yes, continued investment in a number of areas of apprenticeship, and of course vital for bringing in new skilled labour in certain sectors, and they've secured funding to upgrade their mechanics apprenticeship facilities. They have a great setup out in the training centre there in Ballyrain. It's very much in demand, and this means that, of course, with electric vehicles coming in and the emissions and everything, that they have the most up-to-date equipment for that. So that's positive. And they're actually liaising very much with people in the motor industry, and they have a gathering of people there next Monday just to inform them more about it.
People might note that we talk an awful lot about scams and security of homes and all that type of stuff, and the reason we do so is you know, it's one of the biggest areas of crime out there today. People aren't necessarily smashing your door down to rip you off or sticking their hand in your pocket in the street. Every single day across this county and across the region and across the country, people are losing personal information, lots and lots of money, etc. So I'm not surprised and welcome the fact that we're going to see some workshops in this general space coming up, Chris.
Yes, these workshops have been going for, well, a couple of weeks, in fact. It was all part of an event to mark International Literacy Day. And the Donegal County Library, and along with the ETV, have been holding a number of one-hour workshops around the country in local libraries. There's one on, actually, as we speak, in the Twin Towns Library. Just one more next week. That's in Ballyshannon Library. The topic is security scams and smartphones. And there's advice there for people who want to find out more. And just on it, I actually got a call yesterday with an 087 number from somebody who said they were from Revolut. So, I mean, I knew instantly.
The number cloning is a problem. I still direct an awful lot of the blame towards phone companies. I think they could employ technology to do more to protect us. Right, now a local TCS team are up for a very prestigious award, potentially.
Yes, now Tata Consultancy Services, who have a big base here in Letterkenny, they call it their Global Delivery Centre. They've been involved in a competition with tech companies. There's very much an AI input to this. It was a project that they had to overcome a challenge. They were set tasks and their solution was called Project Aura, the AI native universally accessible browser. Now, just to cut a long story short, they are through to the final of this competition. Now, there were over 500 participants nationwide and there was a number of regional events. So just, you know, it's more recognition. So good to see that they're at the forefront of things there. And we wish them the best in that final, which is in Galway.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll keep an eye on that and bring us any news from it. Okay, we'll have more from Chris after the break. The backers of Maria Steen are conceding that she's out of the presidential race. Ronan Mullen, Senator Ronan Mullen, he's senator, isn't he? Deputy Senator Ronan Mullen, he's a senator. He was one of those pushing to get her on the ballot. He's conceded at this point that she is not going to make it. She had an appointment with the returning officer, I presume you would call them, for 11 o'clock. And that time has passed, of course, and she was two names short. So it looks like if you were looking to vote for Maria Steen, you will not. And as I say, just to clarify, I'm only keeping you up to date with that one particular story that's emerging this morning. It's not a Maria Steen campaign or anything. Chris, before we get to the podcast, which is going to be live for people tomorrow, some further news in the restaurant sector? Yes. One second, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Greg, if you have booked your place at one of the tables for the prestigious Food and Wine Restaurant of the Year Awards.
Where are they taking place?
They're taking place in the Shelburne Hotel in Dublin. Mm. Now, there is an early bird price if you want to get your ticket, €225 plus VAT. So, you know, October the 6th is the deadline on that, just to let you know.
I would be more inclined to consider an invite. Yes. I don't have that kind of cash knocking about.
Anyway, from
certainly wouldn't be a plus one anyway.
From a Northwest perspective, amongst the nominations, the best restaurant shortlist in the Ulster region, we have Rathmullen House in Donegal and the Old Glen Bar. So two of them through. And in best casual dining, Fisk. Also here in Donegal,
I've had two of those,
and Umi in Derry has been nominated as well. And in the best wine experience, Rathmullen House is amongst those in line for honour. So good,
I think we could do well there. The Old Glen Bar is a very unique dining experience.
Absolutely.
And Fisk is incredibly popular. People travel from all over to go to Fisk, which is in Downing, so that's Downing's and Carrigart-ish, Glen, in the Offing, and Rathmullen House. They're down for two. Is it wine experience and food, or are they two separate businesses?
They're two separate categories,
Brilliant. So, well done. Good
to
luck.
See it.
We'll keep an eye on them. Right, what's coming up on this week's podcast available for people to listen to online tomorrow, Chris?
Yes, well, I've been speaking with Donna McDade, who is the Enterprise Engagement Officer with the Donegal Education and Training Board. Now, when you go onto their website, I think it's fair to say a lot of people would just be quite taken aback as to the range of courses that are on offer. Significantly, a large number of them are fully funded, so they're free. And they're very much geared for people who may be already in employment looking for a career change, or maybe you want a new skill, or you want to upskill.
You've raised the kids and want to do something for yourself.
Yeah, change of tack. Maybe you just want to quench that thirst for more knowledge. And some of the courses are online, some of them are at some of their centres, some of them are just for a day. And significantly, some of them are non-accredited courses. So sometimes maybe people just want to dip their toe in the water. They want to get a flavour of something. So there's a great range of courses out there. And also some of them actually take into account your own work and life experience. You could have left school when you were 16, gone into a particular sector, have great knowledge of it, but you don't have the paperwork that says you've got it.
Which could stop promotions potentially or something along those lines.
So this is something that they've looked at, and that sort of work experience that you have and life experience, that can assist you when you go on to some of the courses that maybe you are looking at. So lots out there. And as I say, Don McDade has been explaining some of the attractive options that you can look at.
We have another lovely programme called Recognition of Prior Learning, which we abbreviate to RPL. And that's about giving people credit for what they do every day, whether that's in management or the business world or administration, childcare or healthcare. Every year we support hundreds of busy working professionals who deserve to have their hard work and experience recognised. So RPL is really helpful for those that are within the workplace as well. Instead of having to start a course from scratch, it gives people to use their experience to earn their qualification. And that could be for career progression or moving on to other learning opportunities, or even just gaining that official stamp or approval for what they're doing so well already.
You mentioned just as in the intro, the preamble there, Chris, you know, an awful lot going on with the Donegal ETB, well worth hopping onto the website and seeing. You know, we can try and sort of flag this, that and then, right? But you can't beat sometimes opening up the page and having a look, and the information, for me anyway, often drops better.
Absolutely. And when you look at the range of things, it's actually hard to find something that, you know, you're going to be interested in something there. And as I say, one of the great things is that now, the accredited courses, for those who are aware of the scheme, you know, there's different levels, 1 to 6, and there's actually routes into going on and doing degrees as well, and they work closely with the ATU. But from a national perspective, this is all about, and this is one of the reasons why, of course, we have a lot of foreign direct investment as well, that we do have a well-educated and skilled workforce, and the ETB certainly playing its part in that. And just to mention, by way of example, a course that's coming up this Friday in the Letterkenny Training Centre out in Ballyrain. They're doing a presentation skills training course. So it's all about public speaking, how to make a creative presentation and getting feedback and analysing it and that sort of thing. Free. It's on at 9:30 in the morning. And, you know, that's a good example of something that would have appealed to many, including myself.
Yeah, for sure. You've been also been looking at the gender pay gap, Chris.
Yeah, now this is something that I wasn't aware that it was only in 2021 in this country that legislation came in, and bigger companies have to report under the legislation. It started with companies with over 500 people, and then it was 250 and came down. You have to report the gender pay gap in your company.
So what is it? For two people doing the same job effectively, yeah?
Exactly, and they work out. So when you look at the statistics, there is a gap between male and female earnings, but one of the reasons why, of course, is the fact that traditionally there are more men in more senior positions which pay better. So it doesn't mean that a company is actually discriminating against the female workforce, but significantly this year, if you are in an organisation or a company with more than 50 employees, now you must make a return with all the figures, which will be the wages and the per hour and everything, and it'll all be compiled. And sometimes you may need to actually get expert consultancy help in to do this, because it's actually, because it'll be new to a lot of companies, as I say, people over 50, companies with more than 50 people. So it's going to bring quite a lot of people into the net.
For sure.
It's another requirement. So if you're in a business, this is something that you may want to get a little bit of advice on. And in the second part of Business Matters this week, I'll be outlining more details of that. I've been speaking with somebody in the sector.
All right, it's a secret. But definitely tune in. And as I say, that's what's coming down the line. So if you're a company or an employee in a company, you might be, or you should be actually, interested in that. So the podcast will go live tomorrow for you to listen to at your leisure on demand. And it's broadcast then on the radio on Sunday, Chris.
That's right, after the 6 o'clock news. And if you want to contact me, you can email me on businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Chat to you next Wednesday. So come the presidential election, you're going to have three candidates to choose from. If you wish to vote, there are going to be independent Catherine Connolly, Jim Gavin, who's running for Fianna Fáil, and Heather Humphreys from Fine Gael. Maria Steen, who was too short of the 20 TDs or senators required to get on the ticket, has failed in her attempts to do so. So that's just to keep you up to date with that story that's been developing over the course of this show. Now, Ireland needs to recycle an additional 400,000 tonnes of waste every year to achieve its legally binding recycling targets. This according to a new report from the Environmental Protection Agency. And a scientific officer in the EPA's Circular Economy Programme is Sleen Horner, who joins us now. Good morning, Sleen.
Morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for joining us. Look, it seems between recycling bins and plastic bottles and all that, we're recycling, it feels like we're recycling more than we ever have. Why do we not seem to be making any percentage inroads?
Yeah, we are recycling more by tonnage every year, but the problem is that the amount of recycling can't keep up with the amount of waste we're generating. So we reckon it's about four times as fast for waste generation as it is for recycling. And I think, you know, we do have a good waste management system. Householders are doing their job in terms of segregation, and we can always do better at that. But really, I think what the data is showing that it's not at the bin that we're going to make the difference. It's not for businesses and householders at the point of the bin that's going to really change things. If we want to reduce the amount of waste actually generated, we need to kind of go up the supply chain and try and tackle it from where it's produced. So, I mean, we always do need more segregation and better segregation, but it's about, you know, businesses at the very placing on the market stage of the process taking action.
Yeah, because I have to deal with so much waste that I don't want to deal with. You know, order a pair of headphones off an online shop or whatever, and you end up with a box the size of the bin. And there's loads of other examples, even buying locally, plastic, clear plastic around things that it's simply not needed. Three peppers in a plastic bag. I don't want that. I want to be able to bring my egg carton in and pop six eggs in it and go up to the till. You know, like, we want to do better, but we're not being allowed to do so, it seems. I mean, we can always do more, right, as consumers, but help us out a bit.
Yeah, it's really more about the other side of things, you know, at the producer level. I mean, the economy is doing very well and producing lots of good and valuable products for us, but it's also producing waste. And we need to be able to change how the economy functions so that, you know, we're not producing as much waste. You know, for example, producer compliance schemes where they take responsibility of the waste rather than the householder. Now, in other European countries, there's more producer responsibility schemes where they place the price for placing market or goods on the market is higher, especially if they're designed to be single use rather than designed for, you know, a circular reuse pattern. And that kind of flicks the responsibility. It's too easy at the moment to just put stuff on the market. So we need to follow some of our European partners in increasing the cost. So that's actually something they think about, you know, the end of life of their products. Similarly, we've seen things like bans can also help, you know, single-use plastics. That directive banned a lot of, you know, very wasteful one-off plastics. And then, I suppose, more financial incentives, really. We saw how behaviour changed when there was an incentive for people to use reusable shopping bags. We need, on a larger scale, even at the scale of, say, construction sector, incentives to use things like, you know, high-quality recycled aggregate from construction waste instead of using gravel extracted from quarries. The construction sector is one of the biggest waste producers, so there's a lot more that can be done to use secondary materials like the high quality aggregates.
Yeah. So the line's that. Failing a little bit, Celine, but I have one more question, right? So we're using a separate bin for our plastics. We're gathering up our bottles in bags. We're doing everything we can. Is there a figure as to how much of the recycling waste collected is actually recycled?
Yeah, we calculate that. So, you know, the thing is to make sure it goes into the right bin, first off, and then...
Yeah, but let's presume we're doing that. Let's presume we're doing that as consumers.
So the recycling percentage that we're achieving at the moment is 42%, and we're required to remove any losses from the system that don't make it to the actual recycling plants, which are all abroad.
That's 42% of all waste, though, or is that specifically recyclable waste?
That's our total municipal waste is 3.2 million, and we're recycling 42% of that. Mm. So, but we need to get to 55%, which is a huge ask. And in order to actually reduce the amount of waste generated, if we maintain the current recycling levels, we've a better chance of achieving that.
Okay, I must go, Celine, because the line is failing on us. Thank you, though, for your time. It's not your fault, of course. Celine Horner there, Scientific Officer at the EPA's Circular Economy Programme. Right, let's get to some of the hundreds of comments I have here before me. So it looks like the three establishment candidates are going to have a clear run in the race to see who gets to live in a big house in Phoenix Park. Shameful that Maria Steen won't stand. She was being blocked by Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael media shenanigans and promises of funding for independence pet projects in return for abstaining from nominating Steen. Personally, I blame Trump and climate change. Okay. Women's health stories provide headlines and column inches. Men's don't. That's why there's not the same noise about it. Hi, Greg. Regarding Anshanad, isn't it about time that this institution came into the realm of true democracy and stop all this posturing by treating it the same as the Dáil? In other words, we the people elect its members every 4 years as we do the Dáil. This would put an end to some seats being used as political backhanders for parties to reward new or retiring politicians that they appoint. It can also be a little bit of a holding space for de-elected or deselected politicians. Interesting listening to Peter Casey. He has contradicted himself. He has contradicted himself now a number of times. I switched off from him after talking about hiring a helicopter, another candidate not living in the real world. There is a family living in that house in the old town that has the hedge that the public are complaining about. Why should it be up to the family to sort this hedge out when it's a council issue? It's not fair to complain about this hedge when it involves a family. There's a footpath on the other side of the road, but it's inaccessible as it has gates around it. No one's blaming anyone. Someone's just pointing out the fact that they can't get around in their wheelchair. You know, not everything's about blame or attributing blame. Whatever it takes, we should probably be doing so to make it safe for people. A caller says, my daughter's creche has texted looking for parents to send in food for morning and afternoon snacks as they are only going to provide breakfast from 8 a.m. until 9 a.m. and a dinner at lunchtime. Is this normal when you're paying for a creche or other creches looking for parents to send in food also? This is for an after-school term and non-term times. I'll have to chuck that one out. I don't know. On health, please get your check with your doctor every 6 months. It's so important. That comes in from John. Thanks, John. Another, why did nobody not think on Noel Cunningham to contest the presidential election? He would have been the person because he wouldn't be bothered with any of the three standing. Cost, Greg. This is about looking after our health. Cost, Greg, we don't go because it costs $150 for bloods and a cert, or we lose pay like previously. Seriously, men would go more if it wasn't so prohibitively expensive. Well, if that's part of the problem, let's look at that then. So, but another caller says, the problem with men's health is that people don't really care about it. Check out the amount of money spent on women's health versus men's cancer, etc. by government. The difference is scandalous. Well, listen, Noel, I would disagree. Women are disproportionately affected by issues in health. We have to take some blame here. There's lots of stuff there. You can go and get your bloods done. You can go and get your bum checked. You can go and get your heart checked, get your blood pressure checked. No, you know, we can't blame everything. We as men also have to say, right, you know, we need to do better as well, I think. I hope that's not controversial. Greg, there's a GEA club in every little town in the country. Why not do pop-up clinics in conjunction with the HSE? Not a bad idea. Under the Constitution, the parents are the primary educators of our children, not the state. Teaching children about homosexuality and others shouldn't be taught in schools till a later age group, late teens. Children are like sponges. They take in everything that they're taught, right or wrong, by our educators. Many parents are opting to educate their own children at home with help and support provided. But what, again, this is not a state, it's not a statement, it's a question. Like 13 or 14 year olds, seriously, do we really think there's many of them don't know what homosexuality is or bisexuality is? I mean, we're like maybe 30 years on from when they wouldn't have known. Like it's 2025, it's absolutely everywhere. It's in music. If you're listening, if they're listening to Spotify, you know, one of the biggest artists at the moment is a lesbian. You know, some of the songs they're singing are about dancing in gay bars. Do you even know that? Like, and some of these artists are massive amongst 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. They know the sexuality of the singer and what they're singing about. I would suggest, I don't know, I would suggest, but, you know, have a look at the cultural, have a look at the artists that they're listening to and the programs that are watching. And are we saying 13 and 14-year-olds don't know, you know, that they're the one of the biggest artists in the world's a lesbian, and that they would learn about this for the first time in fifth or sixth class? Again, I'm just proposing that. You know, we have to be realistic, don't we? Greg, absolutely. People are so politically correct nowadays that they're afraid to be uncomfortable and speak about anything. Children need to be protected at all costs, and that includes innocence. And that's where parents come in. And if you have an issue, go to your principal. What is going to be taught? How is it going to be taught? What is the language that's going to be used? And if you don't want your child exposed to that, then, you know, find out how the school will accommodate your child while those classes are being taught, is what I would suggest. Knowledge often is power, and kids need to be able to protect themselves as well. But anyway, listen, we'll discuss that further. Have a great day, everyone. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9.